My name is Vikas Tarnidarka, and I'm here to talk to you in this Transplant in 10 series about post-transplant lymphoproliferative disorder. PTLD, as the term up here that you can see, it's a pretty long term, and it stands for post-transplant lymphoproliferative disorders. Type of lymphoma, very common cancer seen after organ transplantation across all different organs. One of the most common cancers that you will see after skin cancer, and particularly in certain age groups, the single most common type of cancer. This is a major complication of organ transplantation and something that everybody in the field deals with on a regular basis, particularly vexing disease because of the high morbidity and mortality. In the next few minutes, I'm going to describe to you some of the salient features of PTLD with the help of the drawing board that you see right behind me. So, as the term implies, it is a post-transplant condition. Lymphoproliferative disorder, similar to, but not exactly equivalent to, lymphomas that otherwise normal healthy people might get. It is an uncontrolled proliferation of lymphocytes in the bloodstream or in the various organs. And these lymphocytes proliferate because of unchecked growth cycle controls, often driven by a virus called Epstein-Barr virus. So this particular condition, PTLD, is actually a confluence of multiple disciplines. It involves transplant, it involves infection, it is a cancer, and the immune system controls, as you will see shortly, are critical to how PTLD occurs. So each of these disciplines is important. The classification of PTLDs is a little bit different than what you might express for lymphomas. The earliest PTLDs are called early lesions, and those can be just hyperplasia of lymphoid organs, and they are reversible with certain strategies such as reduction of immunosuppression that I will talk about in a few minutes. And because of that, this is not classified as a typical cancer. The subsequent three categories, polymorphic PTLD, where the lymphocytes in the tissue have different sizes and shapes, or monomorphic, where there's now one dominant clone, and that clone has one size and one shape in the lymphoid tissue. And finally, there's the non-Hodgkin's and Hodgkin's type lymphomas, the Hodgkin's type being considered class 4, and the non-Hodgkin's type being a subform of the monomorphic lymphomas. And each of these is considered to be a higher grade of PTLD than the polymorphic. And within the non-Hodgkin's type or the monomorphic, while most of these are B lymphocyte driven, some of them can be due to T lymphocytes or even NK cells. I'm going to now show you a little bit about the life cycle of PTLD and really the important aspects of it relating to Epstein-Barr virus are the life cycle of initial entry. So here's the human body, here's the oropharynx, and this is the epithelial layer within the oropharynx. The free Epstein-Barr virus comes in through here. Often this primary infection is acquired early in childhood and may appear just as a regular viral illness of nonspecific etiology. We wouldn't even necessarily know that we acquired it. And then the virus has an important property that makes it somewhat unique within the herpes viruses and viruses in general. It tries to invade the B lymphocyte using a specific receptor that attaches to another specific receptor, CD21 on the B cell and GP350 on the virus. The virus then creates an liposomal form which exists in the cytoplasm of the B cell. The B cell will then go through a variety of maturations through the germinal center, and the body will try to get rid of most of the virus and is usually successful. However, for herpes viruses, somewhat uniquely, a latent pool of residual virus lives on lifelong in our body within the reticuloendothelial system. So we have never completely eradicated EBV, and that virus stays in the latent form but can start replicating again under certain types of injury or stimuli. Now let's take in the transplant situation. Typically, these B cells are going to stay in a standard state of replication. The virus is going to try to integrate its genome into the B-cell genome, or it's going to hijack the B-cell replicative machinery to replicate more of the virus. And these B-cells, if they continue proliferating indiscriminately, that would be a lymphoma or PTLD. We have in our body cytotoxic T lymphocytes that are EBV specific that keep these B cells in check. And that's how we maintain a control over that residual pool over time. However, in a transplant situation, to prevent any of these organs, the heart, lungs, liver, kidney, from being rejected, we have to use non-specific external immunosuppression agents. That immediately blocks right over here the ability of these C-tails to be able to control B-cell proliferation. And now suddenly you'll have multiple B-cells with more mature variants that are the expression of PTLD. These kind of proliferations can occur in the lungs, in the heart, liver, in the kidney, intestines, lymph nodes all over, or even in the brain. So all of these are sites for PTLD. The symptoms of PTLD often, therefore, aren't specific to the mass effect created in any of those organs, or they are specific to the lymph nodes that are enlarged somewhere. They can be nonspecific symptoms, low-grade fever, anemia, weight loss, like you would get with other types of cancers. The incidence of PTLD across these different organs, the most common sites would be the actual transplanted organ itself, could also be the intestines and the lymphoid tissue with the intestines, which is about 10-30%. The various lymph nodes in the body would be about 30%. The brain is a relatively rare site, about 10%, but carries a particularly bad prognosis. So what happens if you suspect PTLD? How would you diagnose it? First, you would, on examination, maybe find some enlarged lymph nodes, or one of these organs shows a dysfunction that makes you suspect. You can do imaging to see if there are enlarged nodes or if there are lesions seen within any of these organs. And then ideally, the diagnosis should be confirmed by pathology, where you extract a specific lymph node and you're able to see the features of PTLD. Once the diagnosis is made, there are a variety of treatments. The most common form of treatment is what we would call reduction of immunosuppression, which I've listed under the form RIS here. And this is the first step, again, to try to allow those CTLs to be able to regain control of the proliferation. This would work in early stages, is not that effective. And then often the other treatments that we use, one is called rituximab, which is an anti-B-cell antibody, and which doesn't directly lyse these mature B-cells, but acts to reduce the population of pre-B-cells. And if that doesn't work, the last form of therapy is chemotherapy, much like would be used for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And you can even combine any of these strategies, starting with this. This could also be first line now, and combinations of these have been used. PTLD treatments are reasonably effective. About 65-70% of patients go into a prolonged remission, particularly with rituximab sequentially and a less intense chemotherapy. For prevention, we can do either immunoprophylaxis or chemoprophylaxis. Immunoprophylaxis could be a vaccine, except we don't have an EBV vaccine as yet. It could be administration of intravenous immunoglobulin, which contains anti-EBV titers. And chemoprophylaxis could be the use of antiviral agents, such as valganciclovir, which, while they are not effective to prevent viremia, there are some data to suggest that they may prevent the transition to PTLD. The more effective strategy to prophylaxis is preemptive therapy, and this involves checking for Epstein-Barr virus titers, and when the titers or the PCR copy loads get higher, to reduce the immunosuppression in an effort to prevent PTLD. So in 10 minutes, I've explained to you what PTLD is. There are many unanswered questions still, which we hope to answer in the future. And this, I hope, will have assisted you in being able to manage your patients.